Hi, friends. We are catching the queer spirit this week. It is a crossover, cross-pollination episode with the absolutely magical podcast, Queer Spirit. Their hosts, Nick and Tanya Mark, and I had such a fun conversation. It really was. And so you may see in the future episodes with Tanya, Mark, and Nick, because it was such a needed, it was really needed for me what we talked about when we recorded this episode, because the way they approach, you know, queerness and healing and breath work, you're going to see it all here in the episode today, because we're merging both of our formats into something that is really special, and I hope that you enjoy it. And next week we have a new episode of This Queer Book Saved My Life with our guest Jake Meyer, talking about the book Loveless by Alice Osman. But right now, please enjoy the cross-pollination with Queer Spirit.
Welcome to the Queer Spirit Podcast. We're your hosts, Nick Fenagoni
and Tanya Marco Viello. Our Queer Spirit Podcast spotlights queer artists, healers, practitioners, activists, and beings
who share their work and magic with our LGBTQIA, two-spirit, trans, and gender nonconforming communities and the collective.
Welcome to Season 7. We are elated to be returning with plenty of magic to share with you all. This season, we're called to explore ways to spotlight one another by collaborating with other queer podcasters. During our cross-pollination episodes, we will shine queer love on the magic and medicine that we all carry, and we'll take a saunter into our practices via some unique, sweet, queer, interactive ways. We'll continue to sprinkle our season with episodes that highlight other queer individuals and groups.
Yay for episode one, our first cross-pollination show. Our guest collaborator today is J.P. Durbogosian, he, they. J.P. is the founder of This Queer Book Productions, LLC, which produces three queer-focused podcasts. This Queer Book Saved My Life, The Gaily Show, and 7 Minutes in Book Heaven. Responding to the rash of 2S LGBTQ+ book bans, This Queer Book Saved My Life invites queer guests to share the book that saved their life. They bring in the book's author when available to have a conversation about the power of 2S LGBTQ+ stories.
We begin our episode with the sharing of the queer books which influenced us during the blossoming of our queer identities. We then flow into an interactive gratitude and toning practice.
To learn more about JP and his work, find them at thisqueerbook.com. All right. Welcome, everyone. We're going to start with just a grounding practice to all just settle in to where we are and to connect in our spaces. So just taking a moment wherever you are to feel your breath and your body, and to feel your body supported by the surface underneath you. And just feeling the gravity of the earth holding us and supporting us. And just knowing that gravity is an embrace by the Mother Earth. And as we begin to tune into the earth where we are, acknowledging the elements where you are, earth, air, fire, water, ether. Acknowledging the plants and animals of the space of the earth where you are. And acknowledging the native lands where you are. So I am in the San Francisco Bay Area, on Ohlone territory.
Me, Tanya Mark Oviedo, they, them, here. I reside on Dongva, Keech, and Chumash land, Long Beach, California.
Hello, my name is J.P. Durbogosian, he, they pronouns, residing on the Dakota land in Minnesota, Minneapolis.
And then just taking a moment to acknowledge and invite our queer guides and ancestors, our tools and practices, and our wise and well ancestors to be with us today as we begin to share space together. Thank you.
Thank you. Well, hello to both of our audiences. I guess I can say that this is a cross-pollination episode between Queer Spirit and This Queer Book Saved My Life. I'm very excited to have this cross-pollination because I feel like there's so much overlap in the themes of our podcast and how we approach the work, even though we come at it from different perspectives. So I'd like to go ahead and have us go around and introduce ourselves per our pre-conversation agreement. So I'm J. Peter Boghossian. I use he, they pronouns. I am the host of This Queer Book Saved My Life. And I also host The Gaily Show. Both of these are about uplifting queer creators and the books that are really impacting and changing our lives and really trying to get behind the story of book bans and talk about what does it actually look like. We know that book bans are wrong, so what does it look like when a book has that transformational quality for an individual? And then bringing in the author to talk about what was that transformation for them. So to all the Queer Spirit folks, it's lovely to meet you through this medium, and I will turn it over to Nick and Tanya Mark for their introductions to the This Queer Book Saved My Life crowd.
We're here. We're queer. I'm just like so excited. And then like there's the hi, everyone, and hello and greetings and thank you, JP. And we're so glad that you're with us and so glad you're here for this cross-pollination. Hello, everyone. I'm Tanya Mark Oviedo. I use the pronouns they, them. And I am a practitioner and co-host of Queer Spirit Podcast, as well as Queer Spirit Care Circles for our queer community. And yeah, super grateful to be here, all of us, to share about the medicine and magic that the common denominators we have, as well as the medicine and magic and intention for our podcast. And it's truly an honor to come together.
And I am Nick Venegoni, and I use he, they pronouns, and I am the founder and co-host of the Queer Spirit Podcast. And yeah, the Queer Spirit Podcast started, I think we're in our seventh season now, and this is the second season with Tanya Mark as my co-host. And yeah, I started it just to start to have more conversations with artists, healers, activists, etc., authors who are supporting and inspiring the queer community. And I invited Tanya Mark into the bubble about a year and a half ago to join me and collaborate and bring in new ideas and perspectives. And we also co-host monthly care circles for the queer community that are free for people to show up wherever you are. We've had people all across the world show up for our care circles and receive support and community and connection.
That's wonderful. Well, I think we'll get started by doing a round of This Queer Book Saved My Life. And so I'm very curious both for you, Nick, and for you, Tanya Mark. And I'll share mine as well. Like, what were those books or the book that had some life-saving feature for you? And on the podcast, that means a variety of different things for folks who are new. You know, guests interpret that as finding language to come out or beginning your gender transition or finding a way to navigate queer phobia in your family or to process a past abusive relationship, or just finding, you know, reading something and going, that's not how I want to live my life. And that's how it saved me because it helped me to make different choices. So I will invite Nick or Tanya Mark. I don't know which one of you want to go first, or you can ask me to go first since I'm the one that's posing the question.
I was thinking of that all that. What's that saying of I'll show you yours if you show me mine or whatever that it was like, I'll share mine if you share yours kind of vibe. Yeah. JP, you know what? That feels good. I'm curious. Like I've listened to so many of your episodes. Yeah. Would you? That'd be very dope.
So I'm actually going to queer my own question, and it's very difficult for me to land on one because I feel like there's so much value in fiction and in nonfiction. And I think there's a lot of wisdom that can come through fiction, right? Because it's a way of seeing the world. And so if I were to pick a novel, and this was very crucial, was A Home at the End of the World by Michael Cunningham. And what I really appreciated about this novel, one, was throughout the depiction, there was no queer violence in it. It was just, there was no like focus on the coming out story or the tragedy of the coming out story, right? It was just the drama, if you will, of living life and going through that. And that was very radical for me in the mid-aughts to finally read something that wasn't about queer suffering. It was about creating queer life. And where that novel ultimately heads, and this is not giving any spoiler, is a polyamorous relationship. And at the time, I just thought, wow, that's really interesting. It was very much resonating with me, but I didn't realize how much of that was getting internalized, right, if you will. I just was really digging the concept of that and the queering of relationships and what that can look like when you try to create a different type of home. And I had no idea how useful it was going to become just a number of years later when I was introduced to my partners and they were seeking to add a third person. So we are in a throuple. And at the time, I didn't realize how much this novel prepared me for that and how to like approach it and things that I should be aware of and things I shouldn't be aware of and how to make sure we're not like, you know, adhering to heteronormative ideas and trying to like implement those right within a throuple or a triad. So even like years later, I was realizing when I actually went back to reread A Home at the End of the World, I was like, oh, I'm totally doing that now. Or, oh, I'm doing this. Like I had no idea that it was there with me all this time. So that, I guess, would be the novel. And then the nonfiction book is The Velvet Rage by Alan Downes. And what I very much appreciated about this book is Alan, it has a PhD and had a counseling behavioral health practice. And where I came to it and where a lot of people that I actually talk to come to it is actually they've been out for a number of years or a period of time. And a lot of the stories that Alan shares within the book are folks who have been out and how coming out wasn't a switch that fixed everything. And so like you're out, but you still haven't processed a lot of these shame, trauma that you get when you're a kid and it just locks itself, right? You know, like frozen inside your body. And how do you thaw that out? How do you let it like just go and be and like this is in the past now? It's not something that's happening to me currently, right? And what I appreciated about that is that it reframed so much of how I actually wanted to approach being in therapy. I really do think of it as like a pre and a post reading The Velvet Rage of how I was engaging in therapy and how like understanding the questions that I should be asking with my therapist, right? And looking and trying to zero in and just recognizing how my brain was trying to like play tricks, if you will, and try to avoid going into an area because that's how I'd been protecting myself for so long. And so with The Velvet Rage, I was able to kind of reframe that and really dive into things that I had been avoiding and my brain either wasn't ready for or it had just become those, you know, those neurons were so used to, you know, firing in a way that was like, no, 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 don't go there. And so those two books, I think, like if you merged them together or read them in tandem together, would ultimately culminate in the queer book that saved my life. So that's my answer. I've shown you your mine. So now you show me yours.
Yes, I freaking love it. Oh my gosh, thank you for dropping that. I also want to thank you for this podcast and the medicine that it brought to me. Like, and JP, I've shared this with you off camera, off Zoom. And hello, everyone. It's Tanya Mark, Oviedo here, they, them. The idea of reflecting on what books had an impact or continue to impact my queerness was such a fun dive for me. Right. And so mine takes me back to, I came out in my early 20s. I also found recovery very early on. And so I finally felt comfortable to share with my mentor at the time, like, hey, I'm queer. And I actually was involved with in partnership with a man at the time. And so I had this, you know, she was like, well, you know, we love this about you. And, you know, let's figure out how to unravel from here. And I was just this early 20s. How do I unravel from this connection to honor this connection? And no joke, she was a heterosexual straight woman, said, well, I also recommend that you go get books about being, back then it was lesbian. I didn't have the terminology of non-binary. And I thought, oh my gosh, but like they have, first of all, I was like, there's books about this. And then, so I was like, whoa, you know, like, and so I remember sharing with a coworker at the time, like, oh, you know, my mentor suggested that I, you know, get some books on, you know, lesbian sex or queerness. And one of my coworkers actually said, well, you know, Anne Rice has this whole series called The Claiming of Sleeping Beauty, right? And this whole like series, and she had dropped that. So I had moved to Long Beach in my little studio apartment right in the heart of the queerness of Long Beach. And I had found a bookstore, and I went to the bookstore and I purchased like 4 books. One of the books was The Claiming of Sleeping Beauty. The other was a lesbian sex workshop book that I, for the life of me, I have these books. They are in the garage at my mother's in a box. And the other two were about just queer sex, like instructional, like something. But The Claiming of Sleeping Beauty and the lesbian workshop book were the ones that I think resonated the most with me. And here's the thing. The Claiming of Sleeping Beauty to me was, when I read it, I think it really felt like another layer of coming out for me, because it has this kink and BDSM, and it has this very fluid, like, it's not about, you know, you're a female, you're a male kind of thing. It's more of like just this idea of pleasure. And to be honest, it allowed me to feel things I think I'd kept in my head, you know, like fantasies in my head, or what would this be like, or, you know, ooh, la la to this and that. And that book for me just really allowed me to explore, like, ooh, I understand this a little bit more. Like, hey, this resonates with me, right? And so that felt very queer to me. And I remember also like sitting and looking at the lesbian workshop book, and it came with like photos of instructions of positions, and feeling like, yes, I would like to try all of these, right? Just because, and that was something that I hadn't felt, that sense of sexual liberation around seeing things, or even being like, it was a queer bookstore at the time too. It's no longer there in Long Beach, but it was this really quaint queer bookstore. So I had not been in that culture, if you will, or been, you know, my upbringing was very different. And so it was all this whole encompassing, you know, idea of like, yes, oh my gosh, I can identify and see myself in this, and I can hear and see other people that look like me, or those types of things. So it made a huge difference in my coming out. I think it made me feel more comfortable in asking questions to other queer people, or being curious and exploring. So I appreciate the memory, going down memory lane. I did find it on audiobook, because I thought, oh, let me see, is this on audio? And I just want to share that it's juicy and hot. The book is still super juicy and hot, but the person that's the author just didn't work for me in that context. But, you know, it reminded me of this very sexual liberation. Like, yes, that to me is very queer, like a very queer, yeah, medicine to me. So thank you for the invite of even asking about, you know, that. So that's what I'm showing today. What's up, Nick?
I'm remembering that one of JP's questions generally is, how did the book come to you? And JP, I don't know how Home at the End of the World came to you.
It was a Borders Books in Traverse City, Michigan, and we did not have a queer bookstore in Northwest Lower Michigan, and I don't even know if there is one even at this point in 2024. There may very well be, and I just, you know, I haven't, you know, lived there for over a decade. And I was, you know, it's actually kind of magical when I reflect on that, because I wasn't looking for queer books per se. I was just sort of scanning to see what was there. I have a very communal relationship when it comes to bookstores. The reason where that question came from is that, one, it's actually very hard to find these books, right? Sometimes you have to intentionally go for them, but sometimes they're just there for you in the stories, right? The books that come on the podcast. And I have this very communal relationship in that when I go to a bookstore, I just let myself be open to the space to see what's there and ready for me. And I know that sounds maybe, you know, interesting to see, you know, me kind of walking through a bookstore and saying like, what's there for me? But I saw Michael Cunningham's, I got to the C's of last names in the fiction, and I saw The Hours, and I was obsessed with that movie. And so next to it, I saw Home at the End of the World. And I, at the time, I was like, oh, I had been thinking about home a lot. And like what constitutes a home. And, you know, Home at the End of the World just felt like a journey of trying to find that home. And so I picked it up, and the cover was in black and white. And it was of a like single family home with like a swing. And that image haunted me because I was like, oh, that's a home. That's supposed to be a home. That's supposed to be full of color, but it's not full of color. And so it has this haunting aspect to it, which home was haunting me right at the time of like, where do I belong? And so I find it to be very, I don't know what the right word is, fortuitous maybe. But the minute I got my hands on it, I also just felt, I'm like, I need this right now. This is the book for me. And it was the exact same process with The Velvet Rage in Washington, D.C. I was meeting a friend. For some reason, I actually arrived early, which when y'all get to know me, I'm usually never early. I'm usually on Armenian time. And I was there early, so I decided to go walking through the bookstore that's attached to Kramer Books. We were meeting in the cafe. I went through the bookstore. And if you've seen The Velvet Rage, it's also a black and white photo, and it's a bunch of kids. And one of the kids has this like electric pink tie. And then in pink background and then in white font is The Velvet Rage. And the first thing I saw was the pink, and immediately I was like, ooh, pink. And so I went for it, zeroed in on that. And it was the same deal. I wasn't looking for that book. I wasn't intending to find that book, and it was there. And from the cover and then reading the first few pages, I was like, it's here, it's ready for me. So, or I'm ready for it, and it has appeared. So that's how both of those books came to me. How about for you? But I also noticed, Nick, you haven't told us your book yet. So
yeah. He's a little slower to show his, just saying.
Tanya Mark did share how they found their book.
I did. And I just would like to do a shout out to Judith Rippins, my mentor, because she has long since passed, because for her being an elder straight woman, I thought, what a beautiful invitation for me to take care of myself that way too. And that she did it with so much kindness, and we laughed, and, you know, it was a whole, I got to share with her the story of me walking to the bookstore and how I felt. So thank you, Judith Rippins, for dropping that medicine. And I also want to be accurate with the claiming of Sleeping Beauty was actually penned by A.N. Roquelaire. So it was a pseudonym for Anne Rice. So yeah, I want to just drop that little fun fact too.
So my book is Tales of the City by Armistead Maupin. And that book came to me in a funny roundabout way. So for those of you who remember, it was turned into a mini series produced, I think, in combination with the BBC or maybe Canadian television. I can't remember. And it came out in the early 90s, which was when I was in high school, and they showed it on PBS. And I actually watched it with my parents, and there were a couple scenes I was like, ooh, this is a little scandalous to be watching with my parents. And this was even before I was like, am I gay? I don't know if I'm gay, you know, that kind of thing. You know, I was like 14 or something at the time. But I, you know, immediately fell in love with it. And the story, you know, for anyone who hasn't read any Tales of the City books, you know, they're kind of a mixed bag of everything. They're like a drama, they're a comedy, they're a mystery, sometimes a murder mystery. But they all take place, most of them take place in San Francisco, and they started in the 70s. So after I watched the miniseries, I was like, oh, it's a book. I want to read the book. And so I went to the library, my local library, and started reading the books. And I think I probably initially got through the first two or three, because at the time there were six. I think now there's like nine. And I think that was, you know, a book where, because it was about queer people, but it wasn't like just about queerness, you know, unlike The Velvet Rage or something like that. And if anything, I think it also helped me fall in love with San Francisco. So having grown up in Southern California, you know, really inspired me to want to go to San Francisco, where I ended up living, you know, starting at college and still am here today. And yeah, it's interesting. I've also been thinking about it as this kind of walking down memory lane kind of thing, and how, you know, initially, you know, the first kind of character you meet is Marianne Singleton, who's, you know, this woman from, I think, Ohio, and she comes to San Francisco and she's very innocent and green. And I think I really identified with that, you know, kind of experience for a while. And then after moving to San Francisco and sort of being here and coming out, you know, started to identify with some of the other characters and, you know, how I sort of saw them and, you know, what it was like, at least in the late 70s, early 80s, when the stories take place, what it was like to be gay and to be a queer person. And then eventually the stories continue as, you know, the AIDS epidemic comes forward. And so it was interesting to sort of hear and know like what was happening, you know, in the queer community, at least in San Francisco, around AIDS and that kind of thing. So yeah, I mean, I did end up reading all the books eventually, but that first one is the one that really sort of showed me what it was like to be gay and to be queer, and that it wasn't just the scary thing, you know, it wasn't just, you know, homophobia abounds, that kind of thing. And that's kind of where it all began for me in a way. I mean, there were other books that I read too, but I think that was like the first one that I can really think of that impacted me the way that it did.
It's such a formative book. So formative. I'm curious, if I might ask, like, what was then like possible for you to do after reading it? Like, you're seeing like ways that people can be queer in the world. You're developing this, like, were you living in San Francisco at the time?
Not when I first read it. No, I was still in high school and still living in Southern California and LA area.
So you were like getting this idea of a potential new home that you could move to, like literally.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it was more just about like there's a certain air of mystery that he writes with, especially because there's kind of multiple stories happening at once, but there's kind of this one in particular story that is a mystery that you don't really know until the end. But there is kind of this air of mystery that felt very romantic to me about the city, you know, that was sort of, it's almost like the story is not so much about the people, it's about the city. And then the people are sort of like aspects. It's like San Francisco is the main character. And then the people in the story are like traits of that character in a way.
Did you see the limited series that Netflix put out a few years ago that was sort of like the next generation? Like there was still like Marianne Singleton and Mouse and
Mona, I think, was in it. I can't remember.
Yes, but the
Mrs. Madrigal,
owner of the house, Mrs. Madrigal. Oh my goodness. So like those original characters from the original like mini series, but Elliot Page and a whole bunch of other folks. It was really fascinating to see.
Laura Linney too, I think, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. I remember seeing that. So the version I'm thinking of is the one that you're now naming, right, JP? That was the updated version. I don't think I've seen the version that Nick has referred to. I'm not sure.
Yeah, the Netflix version was not based on any of the books. It was sort of inspired by, you know, it had characters. And I'm not even sure how much Armistead Maupin was involved in the writing of that script. I thought it was okay. I didn't think it was good as, you know, the other ones, because they did do movies or series of the first three books eventually. The very first one that I saw was just the first book. And then they did end up ultimately doing series of the second and third book. So, yeah.
And how great that you had access to the PBS series. You know, I know a lot of folks who I've talked to where it was so, queerness was so policed in their household, right? That even if it was on like a major network, and I consider PBS to be a major network, it was still, you know, quasi dangerous to even begin to engage, you know, to try and watch it or just to know that it was forbidden. So how great that you had the access to read that and then to like see a home. I love that. did you like move there? Like, I guess you said in high school, so maybe it wasn't like shortly thereafter, but like, did you, like, how quickly after that did you, were you able to move to San Francisco?
I guess probably 3 or 4 years, you know, because I moved here and went to college here right after high school. So it was not too long after that. But I think also just like, yeah, I mean, I knew that it was different because, you know, it was, you know, 20 years later based than the books, even though it was only filmed 5 years later or 5 years earlier than I moved there. But yeah, it was still had, you know, its quirkiness, you know, and which a lot of it is gone now, you know, almost 30 years later. But, you know, something else I'm thinking about, which I guess is not exactly about the book, but I guess the miniseries wouldn't have been made if the book was not written. But was that like, I watched that miniseries with my parents and like, there was no conversation about it, but the fact that like we watched it together and there was kind of this unspoken acceptance of like, you know, they didn't say anything bad or homophobic about the characters or like, we're not going to watch this, you know, anything like that. I think it helped me start to know, even if it was just unconscious, that my parents were okay with that, even though I was not out yet to them. But when I did eventually come out to them, knew that it would be safe to tell them.
I love that so much. I love how both of you have named how the books have or continue or the impact that they've had, like as a part of being a queer person. And then I was like, you made me think of like, well, what did those books lead me to? I mean, obviously in addition to being myself, but hot fucking sex is what it led to be honest, because I was able to explore openly, you know, and like, I'm so grateful for, and obviously respecting anonymity of the folks that I, you know, explored in my early 20s with just out of respect, but it was rad to go into situations and be like, hey, let's check this out. Or, you know, like, let's be open to doing this. And to do that with bodies and energies that I felt comfortable being myself with. And that's where I felt the most like, wow, you know, because growing up in the 70s and 80s, and I did not grow up in a place where I could explore my queerness. I was around a lot of queer people in my family, queer people in Catholic school, but it was all of this, like, we don't talk about it, we don't acknowledge it kind of thing. So coming out for me was this invitation to explore, right? And to explore with other humans, like, to me was like, oh my gosh, thank goodness. Because to be honest, I thought, well, if I go down this route of, you know, being straight, this ain't going to work for me, because it just felt like I did not feel like there was any, I was being authentically me, and nor was I respecting the authenticity of the other person. So I felt like, you know, there has to be more to this. So yeah, for me, it was like such an adventurous time, safe, adventurous time, I will say, you know, being mindful of safety and consent as well. But it was great. It just felt like, oh, thank God, like a relief, like, oh, this is home to me. So it was a different coming home for me, if you will, of like, oh yes, you know, this is me.
I love how you're sharing. I think sometimes people can think like a book can feel like dry, you know, or like solitary. And so when you're saying like, no, these books led me to hot queer sex. Like, I love it, you know, like to be able to name like the possibilities of our bodies and our souls, right? And our spirit, the queer spirit of what these, you know, books can unlock for us and lead us to. It is so, I love that. I love that for you. I'm so happy that you're able to connect with those. It's important. It's wild to think about how a book can get us into our bodies and that practice of that. And they absolutely can.
Yeah. And that this feels like a good moment. JP, you named it at the beginning of this episode that this is an opportunity of cross-pollination. So we want to bring in some queer spirit medicine to the space. And Nick and I would love to bring in a little bit of breath work and movement and some gratitude into the medicine that all of us have dropped and shared today. So, and we want to invite our listeners too, that this idea of remembering, reflecting, honoring the tools, and in this case, books or shows that have or continue to contribute to our queerness. So really taking a moment to If it feels good, shifting your position a little bit, a little shimmy, maybe a little stretch. And as we do that, the invite is to connect to our breath through the natural inhale and exhale. We really want to bring in gratitude to this beautiful round of sharing medicine. And some of the energies I heard were this idea of coming home, or these books bringing the medicine of hearing about a queer lives minus queer suffering, this idea of poly and folks being relationships, not looking like anything in the binary, exploring our queer sex and who we are, looking at what it's like to be gay and queer. Also the idea of coming out, not just as this act, but a journey, and that process and journey and what that might entail. So as we do that and connect to our breath and body, we also want to honor our queer ancestors and our transcestors and all the queer people who have in the past endured and survived coming out without tools and community. So we appreciate you, we see you, we honor you, and all queer beings. And this idea of queer care and community and queer care tools such as books or films that, you know, continue to inspire us, bring us back to a sense of home or queerness. This feels like such a hard, expansive moment. I want to invite us to find some way to open up our chest, whether it's taking our arms and spreading them out to the left or right or up above, and really just opening up our heart space, bringing in that energy of gratitude, bringing it in on the inhale, sharing it with our systems on the exhale. Nick, we're ready for some buttery sounds. What you got?
Yeah, so we want to move into a little bit of a vocalization practice, which is part of the work that Tanya, Mark, and I lead in our circles, doing along with gratitude and breath and movement and meditation. We also do toning. And this is also part of how Tanya, Mark, and I connected and met, was through chanting, singing, toning with our teacher, Linda Arnold, through her devotional voice practice. So again, just riding that wave of gratitude and breath that you've been cultivating in your body and your spirit, maybe for the last couple minutes, and taking a few deep breaths and maybe just letting it go with a sigh or an audible exhale. And then another inhale, and then maybe out with another bit more vocalizing a tone. And just holding the intention of sending that gratitude out through the sound of your voice and the breath, sharing it with the community, the collective, those around you, or even just in your personal space. Once more, feeling that gratitude and appreciation in our breath and our bodies, letting it go with the tone, inhaling. One more time, and if you want to, you can sort of play with movement of the tone or the note, feeling that gratitude in our heart, in our body, in our breath, inhaling. Just feeling the resonance of that vibration of the sound in your body. And also being with the silence of the reverberations of those waves. Thank you. Gracias, gracias, gracias.
Ashe, aho.
Yeah, so we just wanted to share a little taste of some of the practices that Tanya, Mark, and I bring into our circles. We do a first Saturday monthly circle that's in the morning, where we focus on meditation, guided meditation and breath work. And then we do a third Sunday chanting and breath work practice. But that's just a little bit of a little nugget, a little taste of that for all the listeners out there for both podcasts.
Speaking of both podcasts, how does one subscribe and to the Queer Spirit podcast? Where do we find you and your community?
Yeah, we are on all the major platforms: Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, YouTube, etc. You can also find us on Instagram at The Queer Spirit. And then our website is thequeerspirit.com. So all those places you can find the podcast. And then you can also find out more information about our monthly circles. And then we also have a private community that is run by Mighty Network. So it's a Facebook-free, advertising-free space. And it's free to join, and anyone can join there. And by joining that community, you can connect with other people in the groups from our circles, listeners to the podcast, and connect with others. And then we also have the recordings of our circles there. So if you're not able to attend live, you can tune in to the recordings of our circles. And also, the special bonus if you join the community is you get to watch the video interview of the podcast. It's only available there. And where do people find your podcast, JP?
Yes. Well, I want to say about the network, I've been so impressed by that. It's such a thoughtfully, intentionally designed space that you've both created there. And it's really lovely. So I hope folks do go and sign up, because it has the spirit of Queer Spirit in there. It's very grounding. It's very light bringing. I mean that, like, it's just, you feel filled, you know, I feel filled when I was going through it. Right. So yeah, you can find this queer book, Save My Life, everywhere you stream your podcasts. We also have thisqueerbook.com, which lists out all of the podcasts that our company produces. And you can follow us on Instagram at thisqueerbook. I'm also on Blue Sky for all those who are experimenting and trying to see what Blue Sky is. My handle is at jpterbogosian.bsky.social. And then we also have a Facebook page. For those of you who still prefer to be on Facebook, it is there.
Amazing. Just also want to, and we will mention in the show notes the titles of the books and the authors, but also want to thank the medicine of the titles and the authors of those titles: Home at the End of the World, The Velvet Rage, Tale of the City, and The Claiming of Sleeping Beauty. And thank all of the authors for penning these wonderful books that have contributed, you know, to our journey, our queer journey, in some kind of capacity. So
yes, thank you. Well, I'm excited that we got to do this cross-pollination podcast mashup, and look forward to connecting more.
Absolutely. As we were saying in the pre-conversation today, this is the day of the recording. It's exactly what I personally needed. And I'm really looking forward to sharing this with our collective communities, and maybe more cross-pollinations in the future. Maybe, we'll see.
Yeah.
Ooh la la.
Ooh la la.
Thanks everyone for listening.
Thank you.
Thank you. Resources that we share today can be found in our show notes and at thequeerspirit.com.
You're invited to follow our show on Apple Podcasts or subscribe on your favorite podcast platform.
Thanks for listening.
Until next time, much love and blessings. Aho.